Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I'm Mo Abdelbaki, and look around. This is the place. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Pull up a beanbag chair, or pull up a beanbag pillow, or pull up a beanbag sofa, whatever you want to beanbag it around. Yeah, I suppose I should get some other things. There maybe are some spools, big old wire spools that you can sit down and lounge around in. Now, you can't lounge around on a spool. They're made out of wood, and they're heavy, and they're not exactly... Well, you could, you know. There used to be a place in Fort Collins, Colorado, where I grew up, called Avogadro's Number. And it was a sandwich joint. And they had healthy types of sandwiches with, well, I don't know if they were, well, they were good. They were really good. And all the hippies hung out there. And we'd go out, you'd have sandwiches that had like bean sprouts and cream cheese. And I think it was pretty vegetarian, as a matter of fact. And they were awfully good. And you would sit on the floor. They had bean bags and these big old spools that had wire and stuff like that on them. And you'd eat on the floor and eat on the spools. And that was a cool place. And it's still there, from what I understand, some thousand years later. And I don't know if they have chairs now or not. Things have changed. Things have changed. The hippie paradigm is no longer the way it is, but go back to Avogadro's, and as I recall, they had some really good food. At least I used to kind of like it. I was kind of broke all the time, even though I worked. That's the way it was back then. You made like, 20 cents an hour, and, you had to... it sure seemed like that was the way it was. I helped out with my family, and... because that's the way that was, too. You'd go home and I'd buy an album. I'd cash my paycheck and go buy an album. That was the big thing. Albums were about $6-7 at the time. And go home and hand over the paycheck to my mom, what was left, and help out with the family. That's just kind of how it went. I don't think everyone did that. But my dad was a professor. And he didn't do badly, and we had a nice house, and we kind of house poor, that's how that went too. So, well, I had a wonderful house. I mean, we had a wonderful house, and I had a wonderful upbringing, and I'm not complaining at all. Things were pretty good, pretty good. Crazy things going on. Life can be kind of crazy, so. Now, things are weirdo now. Weirdo. So. Yeah. Right now, the things... I don't know if you keep up with the political way things are going or not. I do. I know certain aspects of it. I don't keep up with all of it. But the world is just canoots. Canoots. Or nuts, for those of you who don't pronounce the K. Like in words like kniff. You know the word knife? The word knife was originally pronounced kniff. At least I had a teacher who claimed that. And the word, what's it, knecht. What was that? Knight, I think, or something like that. Like, knecht. And April was pronounced Eprilla, which is kind of pretty. Yeah, kind of pretty. Times have changed. We had an English teacher who supposedly had an affair with a 17-year-old kiddo at another high school. So they just said, well, don't do that again, you. And they moved her over to our high school, where she flirted shamelessly with young high school kids, including moi, which made me so nervous. My God, she backed me up against a blackboard and, stood there and talked to me, very touching me, not to just pressed against me. And it was one of the most nervous moments of my life. I suppose it would have been better if I hadn't been stoned at the time, but that's a different story. It was 1972. What are you going to do? Yeah, it was English class and I was, that's shame on me. I know, shame on me. But I had lost my initiative in high school. It's a long story, very long story. I had felt betrayed by the system, by the man, as we used to say. God, those were weird times. My goodness, those were weird times. Richard Nixon was president. Spiro Agnew was about to be, I think he was about to be. I don't think he had been found out to be a complete and total crook. God, so strange. 50 years ago. Whoa, baby. Great honk. What a strange trip it's been. Long strange trip is the correct lyric there from Truckin' by the Grateful Dead. Man, getting old. Not getting old, I am old. You know, I'm gonna, one of these days I gotta start talking like this for real. Yep, I'm coming through in the Mojave Desert. Yes, sirree. Strange getting old, you know. It's just one of those things you do. You can't, if you live long enough, if you're blessed enough and lucky enough to live long enough, you end up talking like this, like you're from the Old West. Yep, I'm getting a little touched in my head. You know, if you mess around with metaphysics long enough, you end up like this. That's for sure. That is for sure. You know what I did? I bought a bunch of bags. Nice brocade bags. They were not very expensive. And I put all my different malas. Not all my different malas, but the malas that were sitting here on my desk. And my goodness, I've got a lot of malas. I put the malas in these bags, and I'm just like, wow, have I got a lot of malas. And so now I have all these bags here, and I'm looking at them, and I'm thinking, oh, and I kept the little top bead, you know, outside of the mala, and I'm thinking, over the years, and this isn't even all of them, but it's a bunch of them, and I thought, I've got a lot of malas, a lot of beads, and I like them. I use them in meditation. That's one excuse. I like to use them. And I fidget with them. I'm a fidgeter. I fidget a great deal. I do. So I hope you're all doing well in this strange world of ours where things are just about as weird as they can get. And they can get pretty weird. But you know, I'm just going to tell you, none of this is new. None of it. It's all been done before. And generally done pretty badly, as a matter of fact. A lot of the politics that we're seeing now, a lot of the drama, well, some of this has not been done before, but a lot of what we're seeing with the tensions and the people riled up and, you know, don't be afraid. Just don't be afraid of any of it, because most of this has been around before. I lived in Louisiana, and when I went to Louisiana down there, there was a professor whose name was T. Harry Williams. And T. Harry Williams was a wonderful man. He was not one of my professors, but he was in the history department, and I was in the history department a lot because I was a history major. And sometimes I would just, you know, and one of my good friends was a TA in the history department, and he'd stop in and talk to T. Harry, because he was one of his main professors. And I'd be with him, and T. Harry would be sitting there working. He'd written a famous book on Huey P. Long. Huey P. Long was a governor of Louisiana. He was remarkably, famously corrupt. And he was running for president of the United States in 1935, and he did not make it. He was running against FDR and had FDR completely and totally frightened because he could, well, supposedly he could have won. He was also would have been a dictator, probably, but he was extremely powerful. and he was bombastic. And the book by Arthur Penn Warren called All the King's Men was written about Huey P. Long. Arthur Penn Warren taught, I think, English at Louisiana State, where I graduated from. Randy Newman wrote a song, wrote an entire album about being from the South. He was raised in New Orleans, and called "Good Old Boys." And one of the lyrics from the song by the same name of "Good Old Boys" was "Good Old Boys from LSU went in dumb, come out dumb too." And I feel that that pretty much sums me up pretty well. But so T. Harry was a smart guy. Whoa, is he a smart guy? And he had this lovely, lovely man, just this incredible brain. And he wrote about T. Harry. And he was this incredible love power. Just oh my God. He just ground people up if they got in his way. He just ground them up into meal, you know, just and put them in a bag and tied them up. Not literally, but that's kind of how he was. And didn't come to pass. He was actually assassinated in the Baton Rouge state capitol, which is a big, tall building. It's a skyscraper, the tallest building in Louisiana, because they have swampy-type land down there. And you can stand there and stand in the very spot where you can see it happen. They still have bullet holes in the wall. Well, it's marble and or granite or something. I stood there and it's like, wow, this is an amazing thing to see, this history. And they buried him right on the Capitol grounds where there's a big statue of him there. And the Huey P. Long Bridge is in New Orleans. And he built the highway to Baton Rouge. And he's still held with such reverence there. And he's just, it's an amazing thing to see. And you realize that people of power, they just devour it. And they want it. And they crave it. But that eventually, things don't always work out for them, you know? It's a remarkable thing, history. There's a concept that prelude is prologue. Oh, no, wait, it's written prelude. Yeah, prelude is prologue, you know. I mean, no, that's not how it goes. It doesn't matter. You know, and you think to yourself, what do these people really want? They want that power. And they think that their way is the right way. And who's to say it isn't? Well, I think sometimes I am, but it doesn't mean I'm right. But I do try to kind of stick to... I mean, I was a history major, and I had plans to be a historian, an Egyptologist. Well, the best laid plans, you know, and if you don't follow through with what you think you're doing, you can get waylaid. People can get right in the middle of things and kind of throw you off, you know. Well, that's just one way of looking at life. Life is really something. Now, life took me in a different direction. Here I am on the radio, as Woodrow Wilson used to call it, the radio. And this 50 years later, I'm doing something completely different and loving it. I'm loving what I'm doing, getting ready maybe to write a book, a novel, that will incorporate maybe, I'm thinking about, maybe a great deal of my metaphysical teachings and maybe my teachings, my learnings, my whatever they are. And I've also thought, well, maybe I should put together some of my thoughts on Aleister Crowley and his writings, you know, and his whatever I learned. I thought, that's so boring to me now. But it wouldn't be boring to everyone, probably. So I don't know what I'm going to do. And maybe I won't do any of it. Maybe I'll just sit around and, you know, watch the tumbling tumbleweeds pledging their love to the ground. I don't know yet. It's a conundrum for me. Because I'm essentially, I'm one of the laziest human beings there is. I'm just incredibly lazy. You know, I've always been lazy. I've always liked the Arabic word for lazy, which is kaslan. Boy, you know, my parents used to say, you know, ya kaslan. Yeah is something you call someone before you call them. You know, he's like, you don't just say, hey, Mo, you say, yeah, Mo. And the yeah, it just comes before it. So it's an idiomatic sort of thing. So you say, yeah, Kaslan, you lazy guy. It's like the song Lazy Bones, you know? Just the way it is. And it's not that I'm lazy. It's just that if I'm not really into something, and that's my problem. I know you're thinking, what's wrong with Mo today? There's nothing wrong with me. I've just been in my head a lot. People have a tendency to rip themselves apart, to second-guess themselves. You know, I think I'm going to grab my Bodhi seed beads. I've had these beads for, 32, 33 years. I used to run these when I did readings. I've probably run them over a million times. That's probably an exaggeration, but maybe it isn't, you know, because I used to run them all the time. I'd run them when I was watching TV. I'd run them, you know, when I was meditating, and they're looking, the tassel's looking pretty ragged. Red, green, and yellow, red, green, and yellow. But boy, look at these counter beads. They're pretty good. But I've always liked these beads. Bodhi seeds, old Bodhi seeds. It's funny how people value things that are natural, that are, look up Z seeds or Z beads, DZI, and you'll be astounded at how expensive they are. They're agate. You just be astounded. Some are relatively reasonable. Some of them go for tens of thousands of dollars or even more. And it's just a remarkable thing, the value that we put on certain things, you know. That's the nature of humanity. If you look at the way people think, it's always strange to me. What people find valuable, you know? It's funny, I used to go to Kohl's department store. You've probably been there. And they had the Jerry Garcia line of ties. He designed some ties. And I don't know if he actually designed them or not, but I was into Jerry a lot, and I just didn't like the ties. I thought, you know, Jerry, these just aren't very interesting to me. So I never bought any. If I had bought one of each of those ties at the time, I could have turned around and probably sold them now, because he was still alive, I think, at the time. Or maybe he wasn't, but I just didn't like them, you know. Now I could probably turn around and sell each one of them for $500 or something. But you know what? I have no regrets, because it just didn't have any value to me. So it's kind of weird how things go. Things that once had no value or little value that now have an incredible value because someone says there's value to it. Do you think about stuff like that? Do you say, why does something have value now, even though at the time it was kind of worthless? Or does it really have any real value at all? I always think about things like that, you know? I don't know. It's just curious to me. And the things that people will do, the sort of lack of conscience, the lack of respect for other people that I see, I just experienced that in my own home, in my own life. But I'm going to wait a little while to talk about it. So it's kind of not so fresh. So I'm not so bothered by it. I don't want to be mean about it, because it's still a little bit harsh, I suppose, you know? And I don't like to be harsh. I don't like to be that way. I don't like to be triggered by something. Pardon me. I was grilling the other day, and I started the grill. I'm using charcoal again, which I don't think is horrible, but I got some smoke, and I haven't smoked in, over 30 years. And I used to smoke quite a bit, but I don't anymore. And I'm just not used to it, and so I'm still dealing with that. Human. It's kind of interesting being a human being, you know. But I tried not to get triggered anymore, not to be hot under the proverbial collar, you know? It's weird. I've been thinking a lot. I've had a lot of thoughts. I've had a lot of ideas that are coming to me fast and really, phew, man. And not furious, because I don't feel furious. I actually feel pretty mellow. I'm trying to take care of things. I'm trying to, not like I'm wrapping up the show or anything, but I'm trying to take care of ideas. I've got a website, for example. I'm thinking, why do I have a website? I don't think I need a website anymore. I think I probably really kind of need to let it go. I need to just say, you know, website, adios, man. I've had this thing for a long time. I bet I've had it for 20, 30 years. And it's like, yeah, I keep rebuilding it, and it keeps, it's just like, man, I'm kind of done with it. And so you think to yourself, yeah, it's probably time to let the fates take it on the wind. And so you constantly reassess yourself, and you constantly redefine yourself. I think that is the very nature of being human. I think that is the very nature of saying, who and what am I? Do you do that? Do you say to yourself, who and what am I? Probably, I would think, or I would hope, most of the time, maybe all of the time. I really do constantly think, what now? What's next? I mentioned last week I was thinking of writing a novel. And I'm still, it goes through my head quite literally almost all the time. And looking at different angles in different ways, based on this very show, but based on the Paisley Penny Arcade. And thinking about the different aspects of it. For example, the Sock Monkey Oracle. And it just fascinates me that this thing came to be, and really what it is. What is the Sock Monkey Oracle? How did it come to be? Because I know exactly what it is. But under the rules of metaphysics, you can't really define it completely easily, nor do you really want to define it easily. There are reasons for that. There are very strong metaphysical reasons for that. And I've come to realize how important it is to be true to that and to be solidly aware of what it means to, you know, to talk about these things. I know this sounds kind of like, you know, oh, Mo's on something. I'm not. I don't do anything anymore. I do life, you know. But I've been in my head a lot, like I said. And it gets kind of stuffy in there. So I decided to kind of just talk today and talk about what is on my mind. There's a lot on my mind. One of the things that's on my mind is this democracy of ours. There are a lot of people who think that democracy is outdated and is no longer important, is no longer vital, is no longer what it needs to, that it no longer needs to be the method of government that we have. And I don't buy that personally. I just don't think that that's correct. I think that it's a pretty good system. Of course, I've never lived. That's not true. For a while, I lived under what might be called a military dictatorship in Egypt when I was 7 years old. And I do know that it was very different. I was a bratty little kid. Now I'm a bratty adult. And I did some things that could conceivably have gotten my mom thrown in prison, you know, because I was not used to having to watch my mouth. These are the types of things that you realize later on in life. Man, that's not nice. I don't like that. I don't like having to be that uptight all the time. People got along. They knew the rules for the most part. They realized, oh, I guess we better not do this, you know, but I didn't. And so I would say things about the regime, and I was only seven. I mean, what's a seven-year-old doing talking about politics. Well, I didn't like the way things looked, you know. It bothered me. A lot of things bothered me. I'm not going to get into it now. But, you know, I was just a big mouth kid. And nothing against, I mean, I liked everyone I knew. But there's a feel you get. It's very different. Maybe you've been in a foreign country where it hasn't been an open system, where it hasn't been as free as it might be here. And even though 1961 United States was very different than it is now, as a matter of fact, I mean, I remember the US of A in the mid-50s, and it was a very different world than it is now. I remember retro. I remember, you know, that crazy world of sleek. And, I mean, heck, my dad bought a 1961 Thunderbird, you know, rather than stock in Aquatech, who makes water picks. You know, he would have been probably a billionaire, like most of the people who bought into that company. But that spilled milk. But he really wanted to, my mom wanted a T-Bird, and he wanted to make my mom happy. So, boy, did he love her, you know. He could have bought her lots of Thunderbirds. But the whole point is that we have a style of life in this country that could change drastically. And I just, man... I'm just like, wow, that's kind of different. But you know what? No matter what happens, I think we'll all make it. I just worry about us, we in the metaphysical realm. I don't know that there will be an oppression of us. I don't know that there will be a sense of others trying to change our... I'm playing with my tarot cards here. I don't know that there will be persecution. I don't think there will be this time around. There has been in the past. But I don't think that we are going to be... I don't know. I don't think so. It doesn't seem like it to me, you know? I'd love to know how you feel about it. You can get a hold of me. Don't go to my website, because like I said, I think I'm gonna let that go. But you go to my Facebook page. I do have a Mo Abdelbaki Facebook page, business Facebook page, and you can. I've started kind of looking at it again, and what I mean by that is I didn't pay any attention to it for a long time. I kind of go in and out of consciousness when it comes to the internet. I don't know how else to put it. But I'm curious, how do you feel about all of this? I really am. Those of us who have swum upstream while everyone else is swimming downstream, or swam. No, it's swum. Is it swam? Is it swimmed? Is it swummed? We have from time to time been in a bit of trouble, right? Because of our views, because of our... Now, there is a very strong mainstream version of metaphysics that's always okay, because people look at it as being relatively innocuous. And you all know what I'm talking about, right? There's that certain vision of metaphysics that is, what would be the right word? Safe. You're safe at home. But then there is that other brand, and you know, God, I was reading something online, you know, where someone was talking about Aleister Crowley as being a Satanist. And, you know, one thing he was not a Satanist. He did not worship Satan. And it was just sheer and utter ignorance. Complete ignorance. And I thought, oh, my God. And I was going to say something, and I thought, why am I going to even do anything here? There is no reason for me to say anything. Because, truth be known, it does not matter. It doesn't matter. No one's going to care, one way or another. There's no reason for me to say a word, one way or another. There just isn't. No one cares. And it's not going to, because if I write, no, Aleister Crowley was not a Satanist, the person who wrote that's not going to believe me. Because, honestly, he was not a Satanist. He was a lot of things, you know. I can point to about a billion things he was, but he was not that. Now, Anton Zandor LaVey, he was a Satanist. As a matter of fact, he was the kind of the instigator of the Church of Satan in this country. And his daughter took over, I think, and I don't know that much more about it, other than there's a big Church of Satan in Detroit. And fine, they're protected under the Freedom of Religion Act in this country, and the First Amendment, you know. And more power to them. They make a lot of people truly irritable, and they enjoy every minute of it. But yet they look to Crowley, and they make him, you know, the bad guy. He is not. Gets a lot of bad press, which he does not deserve. He did a lot of things. What really bothers me about Aleister Crowley was that he was so against religion and what it did, and then he turned around and invented his own religion. Now, come on, man. Is that what you're going to do? Are you going to be so anti-organized religion and then invent your own? Is that the way we are? Is that what we do? Is that how we treat things? You know? Gosh. It just seemed a little hypocritical to me. You know, you either are or you aren't. You either do or you do not. There is no try. Thank you, Yoda. But that's what bothers me about this time, is that there is a lot of real ambiguous hypocrisy going on. So we have to kind of take care of ourselves. We have to be conscious of what's going on. Because there's a lot of talking out of both sides of the hat. Talking out of the hat. That's an interesting idiom. I wonder if anyone has thought about what that's about. What does that mean? Now, Brigham Young, did he talk? Joseph Smith talked out of a hat, or was it Brigham Young? Brigham Young did not talk out of a hat. Was it Joseph Smith? I need to brush up on some things. Someone to talk out of a hat, talk out of both sides of it. There must be some. The Sorting Hat was actually talked. He talked. That's nothing, neither here nor there. I get in moods, don't I? I'm sorry. I do get in moods, but that's okay. I'm in a mood now. There's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. And if you can't feel the vibes, then tune in a little bit. There's a lot going on, both etherically and pterically. I'll call it pterically. You see, there's a lot going on, and it can be simple, or it can be really complex. There are certain things that were created by different shaman, so to speak, different groups that are really good and powerful, you know? So, for example, a purba. I don't know if you know what a purba is. A purba is it's a Tibetan dagger. It was bonpo before that, and it's a three-bladed ceremonial dagger. And it's a powerful gadget. I've got one right here. And I'm holding it. So if you, unless you're driving, and you, but if you're sitting and you have the, close your eyes and I'll just kind of describe it. It's generally it's iron, but it has also, it's an alloy, and it has three blades. Yeah. And actually, look it up, Purba, and you'll see that it has, it's very fancy. And it has a dorja on it, and which is a representation of lightning. And there's a creature there. Sometimes it's Arjuna, maybe, I don't know. And there are three faces on the top of mine, and another little fire at the top. And this is a very powerful, I won't get into it, you do your research. And it's used in ceremonies. It can be used for many things. If you stab it in a bowl of rice, it becomes the center of the universe. Boom. If you call demons, you can, or call ghosts, you can use it to stab them away, to get rid of them, you see. It's a very powerful shamanic tool. And if you, and I don't do things like that because it's out of my league, you know. But it's a nice thing to have. I've used it for some things. The Tsimshian shaman, they have, and I think other First Nation tribes, they have a thing called a soul catcher, which is generally made out of sometimes the femur of a bear. And sometimes they have abalone, nacre, you know, the mother of pearl eyes. And they have, it's kind of a little bit, just a little bit creepy looking, eerie looking. And it sometimes can be the representation of a sisiudl. Sisiudl, I love that. A sisiudl. A creature which is a kind of a sea creature that has two heads, and in the middle is another creature. You look it up, it's quite fascinating. And these soul catchers, they use to, when someone is ill or someone becomes mentally ill, they will go and catch that soul that has been lost, and they'll bring it back. Their shaman are very powerful. Very powerful. They, for example, they can't touch their hair, so they have to have special combs that they use to touch their hair. It's fascinating. I once saw a Tsimshian, Pacific Northwest, right? Very close to Alaska. A Tsimshian walking stick, talking stick, actually, you know, where only the person holding it can talk, but it belonged to the shaman. So when he gave it to you, you knew, and it was a bird at the top, spirit bird. And this thing is just amazing looking. You know, you're not going to do anything you shouldn't do when you're holding this thing. And they're very spiritual, very powerful. And it just stares at you, you know. But the point is that you believe that these, look it up, a soul catcher. And they have these mouths. And I once saw an entire at the Museum of Anthropology in Vancouver, a whole gate where the whole top of the gate was a soul catcher. Really remarkable. But you can, it's amazing the things that you can find in other cultures that intrinsically, you know, I mean, you just look at them, they have intrinsic value, that they have power. And you realize that there are cultures that know about certain things that we don't know. They know, they understand the essence of how things work. that we have long forgotten. And I think that our culture has forgotten many, many things. We may pretend to understand them. We may think we understand them. But the truth is, we just don't. We don't have a clue about them. But if you look to some of the, like the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, boy, did they know stuff. They absolutely knew stuff. If you look at their pantheon of deities, well, you get it. I mean, they had a god named Khepr. And Khepr was a scarab. And they would portray Khepr as a human with the head of a scarab. And if that isn't a little bit disturbing, well, you know, maybe there nothing is. But then you become very comfortable with it when you realize that Khepr was the personification of existence and of becoming something. Now, I love that. As a matter of fact, there is a beautiful at Dendera, at the temple of Dendera, there is an incredible depiction of a scarab. It's my favorite depiction of a scarab that there is. And I'm picking up some more beads here. This is a very long string of beads. And on this string of beads, I'm actually going to redo these. These are oak beads. And this is actually a set of beads that I designed that will predict eclipses. But here is, on here is a small, but it's brass. And it is from the Temple of Dendera. And it is a scarab that is holding in its back claws, which would be actually the rolling one, is a sun. And in its front claws, it's also holding another sun. And it's winged, and its wings are out. Now, scarabs have wings. Scarabs are remarkable creatures. You know, they're dung beetles. If it weren't for the dung beetles, we would be up to our chins in dung. And this is true. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of species of dung beetles, and they eat the nutrients in the dung. And the reason the Egyptians found them so fascinating and why they had scarabs as a really remarkable creature and they deified them was because they would dig these holes and then they would gather dung and they would roll them into perfect balls. And one would be perfect, one would be imperfect. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. And they would take these balls and take these balls of dung and put them into a hole. And then after they had dug the hole, and next to the hole, by the way, there would be this perfect little mound that could conceivably be considered to be pyramidic in shape. Ding, ding, ding. Now, inside the hole, there would be a female dung beetle, and there would be a male dung beetle who would also be in the hole, and then they would die after the female had laid eggs inside the balls of dung. And inside the balls of dung would be these dung beetles. But what would happen is that they would go through all their stages, the pupa and the larval and the other way around, larval and the pupa. But what would happen is out of these balls of dung would come fully grown, fully mature scarabs. So the ancient Egyptians, they said, wait a minute. Out of these balls of dung come fully mature beetles. That is incredible. So it was like there was this remarkable thing that occurred, right? Existence, transformation, evolution. So it was really kind of a mind-blowing thing for them. Out of these balls of dung, out of dung, I mean, think about that, would come these fully grown beetles. And it was out of the ashes, if you will, but even more amazing than that. And so it became a powerful image for them. And they knew what was going on because they broke them open to see how it worked. But the imagery was really remarkable. Now, one day I'm looking at this thing with the two suns, one very small and one very large. The one very small below, the one very large above, and I realize exactly what this beetle was. It was a representation of the two tropics in the sky, the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn, or the summer sun, the highest it ever gets in the sky, and the winter sun, the lowest it ever gets in the sky. And I thought these people were geniuses. They were absolutely brilliant beyond comprehension because they were observant. And so what this scarab represents is the movement of the sun on a daily basis between the two extremes on the ecliptic. So this scarab also represents the constancy of the sun every day, every day. And the fact that it will always be there and that it will never let us down. It represents eternity. That the sun will never simply fall out of the sky. That the sun will always, always be there for us. Now, if that isn't something, so the scarab represents also eternity and eternal life, which is one of its meanings as well, chepar, right? Now, these are concepts that are so brilliant in ancient minds and ancient philosophies as to startle and stun us. But we have to sit with them and work with them and think about them and contemplate them and meditate upon them sometimes and then contemplate them some more. Who does that anymore? We do. That's what we do. That's who we are. That's what it is about for us. And I'm sorry, people, you know, with TikTok and people with Instagram and people with, you know, Twitter and whatever, X or whatever, I don't think they bother with that. And so people like us, I don't think we're a threat to anyone, although you never know. You never know. Because usually the first people who are rounded up are people whom are deemed threats. And those are people who may be deemed intellectuals. I'm not saying I'm an intellectual, but people who are deemed intellectuals can often be that. You see? Can often be deemed that. Because we think. And people who think, people who put their minds to something, can sometimes be considered a threat because they are doing something different. And different thoughts, I mean, who did Hitler round up? Well, he rounded up the intellectuals, right? And burned books. They burned books. That's what the Nazis did. Nuremberg rally, round up all the books and burn them, right? Remember that incredible famous shot of the, you know, these Hitler youth forming this big swastika of torches and then using those torches to burn books. Or, you know, Qin Shi Huangdi, the first Chinese emperor, who burned books. He did save the I Ching, right? And burned books, and executed the intellectuals. Because they are a threat. What are we doing now in this country? Banning books. Banning books. Banning ideas that are a threat. Saying to people, we don't want you thinking. Don't think. Thinking, ooh, bad idea, thinking. Thinking is a real problem. We don't want you thinking anymore because thinking spreads ideas that are dangerous and antisocial because we want to tell you what's right. We want to tell you what is social. You know? So we can't give up our concept of what is important. We can't give up our ideals of what is the most important thing for us to do. And what is the most important thing for us to do? Well, maintain our right to do what we want to do and need to do. One of those things, of course, is to maintain freedom. The freedom to do what we want to do. Like I said, I've lived in a country which at the time was buttoned down pretty tightly. The hatches were battened. I lived across the street when I was living there. I was living in my mom's parents' house. It was an apartment, and people owned the apartments. I guess that's a condo, right? And it was nice, very nice, you know. It was old, I mean, Alexandria, Egypt. And across the street, they built a school, and I could see right into the school. And they beat the kids. They hit them. And I didn't like that. And it really bothered me. But that was the nature of the culture. You know, spare the rod, spoil the child. I was 7 years old. I'd never seen that before. It was crazy to me to see that. It was so backwards. It was so unlike anything I had ever experienced before. And so I reacted to that. And every morning they would sing a song about Nasser, you know. Nasser, we all love you, Nasser. And one day I was angry because I had just seen a kid, you know, walloped. And I went out and I sang Nasser. I was seven, you know. Nasser, we don't love you, Nasser, you know, blah, blah, blah. I sang just everything, the negative. And before we knew it, police. Not just police, but military police with like machine guns coming to the house. And luckily my grandfather was a member of the courts and was high ranking, and he was he was an important man, and they hid me in a closet and told me to shut up. And I did. I was really scared because I had no concept of the fact that there was no freedom of speech. 7 years old. What an idiot I was. And I could have gotten my mother arrested and me arrested, but he spoke to them and he said, I am this and I am that. And they were, you know, they bent over themselves backwards. Plus, my mom's cousin's husband was a very high-ranking general. And that's the nature of countries like that. It's who you know. It's the politics of it. He was a big deal, very well known. And they sent someone to go talk to him, and he said, you leave them alone, or I'll make sure you're all broken to shoe shiners or whatever, you know, whatever the case might be. And I learned, got to keep your mouth shut, you know, very quickly. This is the nature of the world. We don't want to be like that. This is the first, I'm going to say, maybe it's not the first, but I'm going to say the most important thing you can do is follow your conscience and vote. I'm just going to say it. I don't think there's an option of not voting. People are going to say, oh, it's my business. It's everybody's business at this point. I'm just going to say. We have a legacy that is very important to maintain. And I think that for all of us, it's just really important to be a part of this year's activities. A lot going on. But anyway, a lot in my mind. And I hope you're doing well. I'm feeling really good. Really good. But there are cultures that are just filled with magic. Because magic is as real as anything I know of. And I know of a lot of things. So find the magic in your life and expand on it and make it a part of your life. It's a part of my life every single day. I saw it today. I was listening to something on TV and something pinged. And I said, I'll bet that's exactly what's happening. And it turned out to be exactly what was happening. It was an omen. Pay attention to the omens, my friends. The universe always wants to tell you what's happening. And with that, Until next week, I wish you all peace and love, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah. 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. To those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but it's pretty good stuff. And in Montpelier, Vermont, they have flooding, and that's Vermont is the same sort of thing. A lot of tourism. And this is the most popular time of year to be there. And so, what are they going to do? Because the flooding has been horrible. Montpelier is underwater.